We're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 34 today as we continue in our series through the book of Genesis. We are nearing the end, maybe in a month or two. We're getting close. So we've been going through it since September of last year. Now, before we get to our passage today, I want to just show you something. So can you all refresh Proclaim? Because it's showing the wrong information. How many of you like Sprite? Not very many of you. Okay. So I should have picked something else here. So I have my Sprite here, and a few of you liked it. So what do you all like then? Are you just like water? You like water and coffee? Is that all? Okay. So who are my Sprite drinkers then? So, now, I was asked to have someone help me with this, and I don't know if they want to, though, but Matthew, you were volunteered, so are you back there? So come on up here and help me out for just a second, so you can thank your sister for that.
She's leaving in September, you're
going to
be okay.
Now, Matthew, do you like Sprite at all?
Yes.
A little bit? Okay. So we're gonna. So I'm just gonna have you come stand over here for a second. Don't worry, nothing is going to happen to you. I promise. So man, how did you get taller than me? When did this happen? Okay, so we're gonna have you go right over here. Now, so you like Sprite? What's your favorite soda?
Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola. Okay, I'm a Pepsi drinker myself, but we can still be friends, right? So you like Sprite. Now, do you like Sprite with Mentos in it?
No?
Well, we're going to give that a try today. So go ahead and hold on to this. And we're going to see. I didn't test this out here, but we'll sort of put it right here in the middle and hope that it doesn't make too much of a mess. So set that in the middle. And what I'm going to have you do is go ahead and get some Mentos out. And I'm just going to conveniently back up some. Here, let me move our monitor also. Oh, get as many as you can. Yeah, get a bunch of them. So I'm going to have you get those Mentos out, and then on the count of three, when we're ready, you'll get the top off of that and drop those in there. We're going to see what kind of not so much of a mess we can make. But are you ready? Okay. So go ahead and take the top off. And let's go ahead and do a countdown. 3, 2, 1, drop it. That was the lamest. I was expecting so much more. All right. Well, this is a tough way to start the sermon then. I don't think it's going to do anything else now. Okay. All right, well, let's give him a hand here as he goes down. So, Matthew, before you do go all the way, can I just maybe just take these outside for me here without spilling it? Thank you. Now, you've seen them before, right? You've seen it go up high. I'm not lying about that. I almost wonder if I have some defective Mentos, because I tried it with another something earlier, and it wasn't working, so I got the good bottle, and it still didn't work. So I'm gonna blame Mentos on that. So why are we doing this? Is this a science lesson? No. The reason that I show you this is not to just show you soda. The reason that I'm showing you this is actually what we've seen, even though it wasn't very exciting, is what we're going to see in our passage as well. And what I'm talking about is why Mentos caused that bottle of Sprite to at least fizzle some. It's supposed to go like up like that. But why does it do that? Well, I read about it this week, and the reason is that inside of Mentos, there's lots of little microscopic holes. And so when they go into the bottle, what happens is that the CO2, the carbon dioxide, then go through the microscopic holes, connect or attach to what's going to the Mentos, which then creates sort of like a gas bubble and then causes them to go up. And so they go through the holes, causing essentially then this explosion to go up. And what we saw there is what's going to happen in our passage today as well, spiritually speaking. We're going to see people who have these microscopic holes, these spiritual holes in their life, and they allow influences to get in there from the world to get into their lives. And as the influence of the world goes in, it attaches to various parts of their lives, and these little holes build up, and then eventually it explodes. And as we're going to see results of this, there's going to be a woman who is defiled, there's going to be people who are murdered, and there's others who are going to live in fear all in this one chapter. And all of these come out of the influences of the world that sort of get in, sneak in, and then build up pressure in a person's life and then explode out. And so my goal today is going to show you the various ways that this can happen and negatively influence people in our chapter. And so the ways that we're going to see, I'm going to look at five different ways that people are negatively influenced by the world in this chapter. And hopefully then you can learn from them and not make the same mistakes. Because if you do, you're going to encounter similar problems. You may not murder someone or something like that, but there's going to be problems and explosions in your life that come out that create all sorts of chaos in your life. And so to review what happened in the last chapter we looked at, in chapter 32, we saw that Jacob was headed out of a bad situation with Uncle Laban, and he was headed back to scary Esau, to his brother who wanted to kill him a while back. Now, we find out in chapter 33 that Jacob reunites with Esau, and then Esau is actually no longer mad at him. So they're all happy. And at the very end of chapter 33, we see that Jacob safely... And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. And it says there at the very end that he moved on to where he's supposed to go. No, it doesn't say that. It says he camped before the city. And that's going to be important for us to notice in a moment. He goes, instead of going all the way to where he's supposed to go, he stops about 30 miles north at this city of Shechem. And so this brings us now right into chapter 34, which is our passage. And the first negative influence that we see, the first problem that starts going into these cracks, are the love of the world, loving the world. So let me read verse 1. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land. Now, many scholars believe that Dinah was probably around the age of 13 to 15 during this time, at this point. And it's sort of odd, if we think about it, that this strict patriarchal culture would allow Dinah, as this teenager, to go out and just, quote, see the women of the land. So, let me say that what's about to happen here is not Dinah's fault. So I'm in no way saying that because she went out, what happens to her is her fault. But Dinah's desire to go and to see the world puts her in a very dangerous spot. And sadly, this should never have even happened because Jacob should not have been there. We were told in Genesis 31 that Jacob was told to go back to the land of his fathers. And in chapter 28, we saw that Jacob had made a vow that he would go to return to Bethel to worship God there. And Bethel is not Shechem.
And so that's where he had told God that he would go. But instead, he stops near the city. And this is a very similar situation to what Lot had done at the beginning of Genesis. So instead of obeying God, Jacob wanted to be near the world. He wanted to be there and experience the nice pleasures of the world. And just like Lot, it ends up getting himself and his family in a lot of trouble. And that's our problem as well many times. That throughout our life, we make these decisions, these various decisions that sort of lead us in the direction. Are we going to follow God, or are we going to follow the ways of the world? And this may have to do with our physical location, like where God is calling us to be. But many times, it has to do with other things. So, for example, in college, are you going to seek to live a life that honors God? Or are you going to seek to live a worldly life and be involved in parties and all sorts of other things that don't honor God? In dating, regarding intimacy, are you going to follow God's way, or are you going to follow the way of the world? Throughout life, are you going to make going to church on Sunday morning a priority in your life, or is it something that you're going to just do when you have nothing else going on? So these and a million other decisions will reveal if you are going to follow God or follow the ways of the world. So that's the first negative influence that we see. And in the next couple of verses, we see the next negative influence, and that is being controlled by fleshly desires. And I'm going to pause there and just grab my water. So in verse 2, it says, "And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humiliated her. And his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the young woman and spoke tenderly to her." So Shechem spoke to the father Hamor, saying, "Get me this girl for my wife." So poor Dinah goes out to see the world, and the world grabs her and takes advantage of her. And Shechem, this prince, takes Dinah and rapes her. And yet, after this encounter, he falls in love with her. And so now he goes to his dad and he tells him, he says, "I want to marry that girl." And what this shows is a perfect picture of what it looks like to be controlled by the flesh. Shechem saw, Shechem wanted, and so Shechem took. Why? Because he wanted to. Now, in a more innocent way, much more innocent way, I came across a very short video that I think illustrates perfectly what it looks like to be controlled by the desires of the flesh. So let's go ahead and let's take a look at that. All right, we're having some technical difficulties. It's a bummer to leave you all on sort of the cliffhanger here, see what's going to happen. We'll give it one more chance. All right, who needs videos in church anyways, right? What we were going to see is this dad take the sandwich, and as he goes to eat it, the baby, very cutely, tries to grab it and take it to herself, even though she probably can't even have food. And then the dad then takes his drink, and he goes to drink, and the baby goes and grabs the drink and tries to drink it, even though she probably can't have soda as well. Now, she does it in a very cute way, but what the baby saw, the baby wanted, and the baby then tried to take at least. And it's cute when a smiling baby does it. It's not cute when we try to do it. And we're warned in the New Testament to be careful about what our flesh desires. Let me read from Galatians chapter 5. Paul says, "But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh. For these are opposed to each other to keep you from doing the things you want to do." So if you are following the leading of the Spirit, then what's happening is you are going against your fleshly desires. However, the opposite is true as well. And this is why it's so dangerous for Christians, that when you follow your desires, the desires of the flesh, You're walking away from the leading of the Spirit in your life. So every step that you take towards the flesh is an additional step away from the Spirit. And Paul gives some of these
desires of the flesh in Galatians 5. So let me continue reading in that. He says, now the works of the flesh are evident. Sexual immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, fits of anger, rivalries, dissensions, divisions, envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the things like these. I warn you, as I warned you before, that those who do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. So why won't they inherit the kingdom of God? It's not because they've committed some sort of unforgivable sin. It's because as they pursue the flesh, they are going further and further away from God. Now, continuing in our passage, we'll look at the third negative influence that we see in this passage, and that is giving in to anger. And this is really a form of a fleshly desire, giving in to the flesh. But this is one specific one that we're going to focus on because it's going to have a big impact in the chapter as they go down this murderous path out of anger. So verse 6. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob had come in from the field as soon as they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he had done an outrageous thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing must not be done. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it and get property in it." Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes. And whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me for as great a bride price in gift as you will, and I will give you whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife." So this offer he gives is essentially to join the two groups together. He's saying, hey, let's become one. We'll intermarry. We'll join together. We'll give each other our property and things and sell each other stuff, and it's going to be great for everyone. Verse 13, the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully because he had defiled their sister. And they said to him, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you will become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. And then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you, and we'll become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter, and we will be gone." Now the brothers have no intention of honoring this, but what they're doing is they're setting a trap. And so this trap now, we're going to see in verse 18. And the words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem, and the young man did not delay to do this thing because he delighted in Jacob's daughter. Now he was the most honored of all his father's house, which is really saying a lot about who those people are. So Hamor and the son Shechem came to the gate of the city and spoke to the men of the city, saying, "These men are at peace with us. Let them dwell in the land and trade in it. Behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters as wives and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us and become one people, when every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, and all their beasts be ours? Only let us agree with them, and they will dwell with us. And all who went out to the gate of the city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem, and every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of the city. Now, if I was in that group, I'd be like, hold on a second, what are you asking me to do? But they saw it a different way. And you can see that these people have a hidden agenda as well. They think that they're going to be able to get access to the property and have all these privileges then. And so they agree to it. And then we come to the next verse of in verse 25, which is probably the most understated verse in the entire Bible, which is, on the third day, when they were sore, two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, took their swords and came against the city while it felt secure and killed the males. So at this point, I got a little distracted doing some research this week about why they were sore on the third day as opposed to the second or the eighth or all that. So I read about this, and at that time there were no antibiotics, there were no sterile tools, and there was no anesthesia. And so I read that it was during the first 2 days after an adult circumcision that there would be bleeding and pain and inflammation. But on the third day, it's typically when the inflammation's the worst. And so the pain would be at the highest level. So swelling would be at the highest. I read that white blood cells would flood the area to fight infection, leading to increased pressure and fluid buildup and tenderness. And so they would be very, very sore, and it would be even so bad that it would be difficult for them to walk on that day. Even more, since they didn't have sterile tools, many of them probably had fevers to fight the infection. And so all this to say that the group of men were completely debilitated on day three after that incident. So what do the angry sons do? They stroll in there and they murder all the men. It says they killed Hamor and the son of Shechem with the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went away. And the sons of Shechem came up upon the slain and plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. And they took their flocks and their herds and their donkeys and whatever was in the city and in the field, and all the wealth and all their little ones and their wives and all that was in their houses they captured and plundered. So this is the last mention of Dinah in the Bible. She's mentioned as just in terms of a daughter of Leah in chapter 46, but we don't know what happened to her after this, other than that she was taken back to her family's home. I read that there's one non-biblical Jewish writing that said that she left emotionally devastated and never married, but that's just sort of speculation. It was written hundreds of years after, thousands of years after. And so we don't know what happened to her, but we do know that an entire town was wiped out because of the anger of the brothers. And these verses give us various examples of what it means to give in to the flesh. So Shechem blindly agrees because he wants Dinah. The townspeople sort of just quickly agree to the circumcision so that they can take advantage of the Israelites. The brothers deceive and lie to get revenge. And all of this ends up in destruction and murder. Now let's think about this. What was the anger justified? And I would say absolutely. But they were not just angry. They were controlled by their anger. And that led to the point of murder. And I think all of us would likely agree that we should not be controlled by our anger, because it can lead to all sorts of problems in our life. But far too often, we don't practice what we preach. And far too often, we let anger grab us, and then it leads us down a path of destruction of things. Back in 2023, there was a 23-year-old man who was sentenced to 25 years to life in prison for shooting a 45-year-old father of three in Manchester on South Willow in a road rage incident. And as the man was about to be sentenced, he said this to the court. He said, "There hasn't been a day that I haven't thought about the horrible events that took place that day." What happened? Well, he let anger control him. And as Christians, we're not only called to not murder, we're called to do the exact opposite. For example, James 1 says, "Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Even more, we're told as Christians in Romans 12 to repay no one for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable. And in the sight of all, if possible, so far as it depends on you, Paul says, to live peaceably with all. And so let's be people who pursue peace, not anger. When you're at work this week and your coworker does that thing you really hate, I want to challenge you to pursue peace, not anger. As you're driving down to Boston this week on 93 or whatever road you're headed down there, and the car cuts you off and then maybe gives you a wave with just one finger after that, I want to encourage you to be a peacemaker, not an anger maker. And again, there's going to be times where we get angry, and when that anger comes, we check it and we don't let it control us. And instead, we seek to let the Spirit of peace control us. Number four, we see one more negative influence, an additional negative influence, that is a fear of the world. So Jacob, the dad, has been very passive in all of this. And in verse 5, we learn what he did when he heard about what happened. It says in verse 5, "Now Jacob heard that Dinah had been defiled, he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with livestock in the field. So Jacob held his peace until they came." What did he do? He did nothing. And then this likely caused the brothers to act the way that they did because the father's doing nothing. And then after everything takes place, what else does Jacob do? Well, after these people are murdered, Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on," what does he say? "On me, by making me stink to the inhabitants of the Canaanites and the Perizzites." He says, "My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves and attack me, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." And then it's as if the writer of Genesis, Moses, wanted to give the brothers the last words. Says, "But they said, should we treat our sister, should he treat our sister like a prostitute?" So again, what is Jacob's concern here? It's for himself. Jacob is giving in to fear. Let's remember, what had God told Jacob? What had God promised Jacob? That he would be made into a great nation. That God would be with him, that he would be his God, and that he would be with Jacob. But instead, Jacob reverts back to fear, thinking only about himself and only acting on his behalf. Now, there's different types of fear. There's good fear to have that gets us out of trouble. But then there's also bad fear that gets us into trouble. Bad fear that takes our eyes off of God and cripples us many times. And this is the fear that Jacob has, that his fear leads him to passivity. So God tells us that we do not need to be afraid. God says, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." So when you're following God, you don't need to be afraid of what will happen to you. Not because he's going to make everything perfect, but because he's going to be with you and keep you close to him. So I want to challenge each of you to pursue faith over fear. So if you're following God, he will be with you. And so let's have the faith to believe that and to hold on to that in difficult times. And when you're afraid, turn to him and ask him for help instead of turning to your own self-reliance or turning to something that you think you can do to fix the solution. Now, before I close, I want to ask the question I've been asking every week in our series, and that is, where is Christ in this passage? And this leads to one more negative influence that I want to mention that comes from verses 14 to 18. That is, attempting to join God's family through works. So even though Shechem and Hamor and the entire group do not really understand what they're saying completely, what they're trying to do when they say that they'll join by circumcising themselves, what they're saying they're going to do is that they're trying to join the people of God through circumcision. So in other words, they were trying to get the benefits of the promises of God, the possessions and the blessings, through works. And Romans 2 talks about this very idea. Let me read two of the main verses. Paul says that, "For no one is a Jew who is merely one outwardly, nor is circumcision outward and physical. But a Jew is one inwardly, and circumcision is a matter of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the letter. His praise is not from man, but from God." So Paul's saying that you're not part of God's family simply by applying a physical mark on your body. Instead, you're part of God's family when your heart is circumcised. And that only happens when you give your life to Jesus Christ. And so to join the family of God, you must have your heart transformed by Jesus Christ. So don't make the same mistake that the people of Shechem made here. Don't try to earn your way into the family of God. Don't try to do good works to be good enough, because you're never going to be good enough to get to God. Let's turn to Jesus and be transformed through him. Let me close with this. There was a church in Seattle that had grown rapidly. And at its peak a number of years ago, it had 15 campuses, 12,000 people, and it had a top-rated podcast, a book deal, and it had a global following. And on the outside, it looked like it was a spiritual success story, but underneath, there were all sorts of little cracks that were forming. Behind the scenes, there was a culture of fear and control and verbal abuse and anger and unchecked pride. And over time, the influences of the world sort of creeped in, and eventually things exploded. And in 2014, the pastor of that church resigned, and the church disbanded, and to this day, there's thousands of people there that are still picking up the pieces. Many, many people there that stopped going to church completely. What happened? Well, it was the influence of the world that seeped in. The desires of the flesh took over. Anger ruled. Fear led. And it all led to something that then crashed down. And the passage that we looked at today, it isn't just about a messed up group of people. What we see in this chapter is what happens when we let the world in, when we let the desires of the flesh control us, when we let anger take the lead, and when we let fear call the shots. And so when we try to earn God's love instead of receiving it. But the good news is for all of us that even when we mess up, that Jesus came for spiritually cracked people. And for angry people, and for scared people, and for worldly people like us. And instead of letting it explode in your soul, he took the explosion to the cross. And so he absorbed the sin and the anger and the fear and the shame so that you and I could be made new. And so let me ask you, are you letting that pressure build up in your life? Are you chasing after the world? Are you letting fleshly desires lead? Are you controlled by anger, paralyzed by fear? Are you trying to earn what Christ already bought for us? So you don't have to live that way anymore. Come to Jesus and stay next to Jesus. Let him patch the holes. Let him calm the pressure. Let him change your heart. And let him lead you into peace. I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then we're going to go into a time of communion after that.